Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Psychology of Work, Why People Do What They Do, a podcast exploring the science and stories behind high-cohesion, high-performing teams. My name is Dr. Bobbi Wegner. I'm a lecturer at Harvard in organizational psychology and the founder of Groups. In each episode, we dive into the minds of industry experts to uncover what drives team and individual dynamics, tackle real-world challenges together, and share actionable insights to help teams feel and function their best. Thanks so much for joining, and let's get started. Welcome, everyone, for another episode of The Psychology of Work. Super, super excited to have LaToya Lynn here. LaToya is a fractional chief people officer and human capital strategist with a deep expertise in helping high-growth organizations scale sustainably. With over 15 years of experience spanning tech and healthcare education startups, LaToya really partners with mission-driven companies to build inclusive cultures, develop leaders, and align people strategies with like the business goals. So, you know, LaToya and I really just like chatted it up when we first met. She holds dual masters in IO psychology, which is what I teach, and organizational behavior, and also has pursued advanced studies in AI at MIT and executive coaching at Harvard. LaToya teaches a future of work at CUNY, which I used to actually teach at. We don't know if we even like talked about this, where she explores the intersection of psychology, technology, and leadership. So whether serving as a CPO, an advisor, or educator, what I really love about you, LaToya, is that you bring a systems thinking to like every level of like engagement, really holding both sort of the head and the heart, or the heart and the rigor of the data at the same time. So thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much. What a wonderful introduction. And also, like, you know, I remember the first conversation, it was like IO psychology heaven. It's a beautiful bond, a beautiful connection.
Yeah, I love IO psych. And I always love when I find IO psych people, because although it's been around for a while, it's really like, you know, making it sort of, it's like being brought to the forefront of the stage now, which I love. But anyway, one thing we really kind of like nerded out on early was motivation, because motivation is, I know, something that's near and dear to your heart and something you think a lot about. This is also one of the classes I teach. I literally teach a class called Motivation, What Drives, you know, Human Behavior in the Workplace, all through the lens of like, how do you build intrinsic motivation to help people kind of both feel and function their best? So when you think about this, like, what comes to mind for you?
I mean, so many things come to mind when it comes to motivation, especially now. We're still talking in the context of, you know, pre-COVID and post-COVID and getting people, you know, back to work. And we have like so many graduating classes coming up, you know, that had, you know, such a big change in their life. And, you know, it's been such a difference in how we're looking at work. And I almost wonder if we are using the same old playbooks to then think about motivation for employees, think about motivation for performance, think about motivations for just people's just intrinsic values and like what that value system looks like. So I love this topic because, you know, I think things have changed. And my hope is with this conversation is that it continues to grow and develop and other people kind of pick it up and like, you know, twist and turn it in ways, because I think it's something that we need to really unpack.
Yeah. I love all that. Yeah. When I think about motivation, and I too, you know, it's sort of a big thing we talk about is like, and I actually was just, you know, doing another podcast recently, and we're talking about how the way of like kind of the system we have in place at work are not mapped against sort of like to really optimize motivation. And so, you know, COVID and all the changes sort of allow us to rethink this, but it requires work to rethink it. But yeah. It's not just COVID. It's like there's so many things happening at once between, you know, kind of coming out of COVID, sort of AI and technology and all that rapid expansion, but also this pressure coming up from like younger generations around expectation around what they need to feel really good in the workplace. So there's these like multi-dimensional thing happening right now that requires teams or leaders to take a hard look in the mirror and be like, what are my business goals? What are these people who I need to do the work need to do the business goals? And what do I need to do as a leader to like activate that?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And I think, and I'll pepper in the economy as well, you know, and I think if I were to, you know, when I advise, you know, executives and leaders in this day and age, is, you know, I always get the question of like, and let's start, this is like the perfect example, going back into the office versus not. I tell them I'm indifferent. And people are like, what? What does that even mean? I'm indifferent.
I always say that. I don't have a dog in this fight. Like, I'm not trying to push you to do one way or the other. What are your goals and how do we look at this through psychology?
Exactly. And the thing is, the real battle, like the real argument that we should be having is, what will make people the most productive?
Yeah.
Right? What will help the organization reach its goals? What will lower cost and overhead? And what will create, you know, a mechanism where people can perform at their best selves? And there's a lot of conversation around the organization having taking on the onus of the social construct of the youth, right? They're not in the office. They don't really understand work ethic. They don't really. And I'm like, guys, like, that's not the job. Yeah. That's not the job, you know, because if we were to go back into history and open up one of those histories book in the 1960s, like we were revolutionizing a lot of things then, you know, about the place and how it should look. And the people, you know, that were in other generations prior to that were like, what are they doing? Right. So is this constantly happening again?
Yeah, this is just what happens.
It is what happens. And it's like, you know, and I think me as a millennial, we're just so used to change. Like our whole, like we went from like analog to like AI and like one and within one lifetime. And we're kind of like, okay, well, what else is going to change? Like, what else do we get involved in? How do we move things forward? So when it comes going back to motivation, you have to build a strategy that is for the future, not something that is going to help like stopgap, like what's happening the last like 16 months, 18 months, or, you know, 36 months past, right? It's like, what is going to bring you to the future? And Bobby, I think one thing that you and I always like, you know, wrapped our heads around our first conversation was the use of IO psychology. Like, let's dust that off. Like, there's so much content to really understand individuals within the workplace at a very basic level.
I love it. Yeah, no, I mean, and if you're kind of joking about like what going from analog to like digital, I studied abroad. I'm Gen X, right? So I studied abroad my junior year and everyone had a cell phone. I was like, what is this thing? You know, because they were like 6 months ahead of us basically on that front, which is also kind of funny, but sort of came back. And then all of a sudden, you know, like getting my phone to like, I barely use my computer even. I don't even remember where I like did papers. Did I go to the library? Did I handwrite them? Like, what did I do?
We handwrote them. I remember I was just talking to some friends that are also Gen X's and they were saying like, yeah, did you take a keyboarding class in high school? I said, yeah, I would, you know.
Oh my
I was
God, yeah. I think, I don't even know.
Yeah, like you just take a keyboarding class and you just learn how to like, you know, type the way you need to, you know, the ASD, FG, you know, that whole thing.
Oh my
and
God.
Whole,
yeah.
Like, so, but these are things that we learned, but it was building for the future. And when I go back to the workplace and I go back to the concept of motivation, there's a couple of things I think that employees and I'm just shout out to the world. Hey, world, let me break down the fourth wall for a second. I'm looking at you guys. Continue to build for the future. Mm-hmm. And really think about like, what is the most productive way people can get work done?
Totally.
And what is actually motivating people intrinsically? Because people think that, oh, all they want to do is lay on a beach. And really think about when you talk to some of the Gen Zs and also some millennials is that you hear that their parents were never around because they were always at work.
Yeah.
You hear that they, you know, spent most of their times on business trips or in the office or so on and so forth. And they grew up like that.
Yeah.
And they liked it. So now they're kind of turning things in their head and they're like, no, I want work-life balance, whatever that might be. I want to have a hybrid schedule. I want to be able to, you know, casually do things and work. And honestly, I think that they're going to win because the future generation always does win. That's what we've been able to get so far and what we've been doing going forward. So let's get on with the now and think about how we can be more productive.
Yeah. And I think that's where psychology really comes in, you know, is that it's like, you know, psychology is psychology, human behavior is human behavior. There's patterns all over the place, right? Then and like, once you can start to see the patterns and you're like, okay, this is what people need. We know how to get the best out of people in different contexts. How do we map that on the workplace? Right. And that's really where IO psychology, for those of you who are listening, don't know, it's industrial organizational psychology. Yeah. And it's just, it's like psychology in the workplace. And how do we look at how what people need as individuals, how do we work in systems, and how do we sort of optimize it so people feel and function their best. And although there's sort of like truisms or things we know from like the science of people around what people need, really like thinking for like each company, like what do they need to meet the business goals, which you keep bringing up, right? There's no like right or wrong here. And like I often draw parallels to families, which I don't really like to doing within organization kind of. But what I mean is that each family, you could have a great family on block one and a great family on block two. The vibe of those family and the values of those families are going to be different. But like there's certain human needs that both families have, right? And so there's no right or wrong approach, right. But it's really about like, okay, what does the business need? How do we get very, very clear around whatever those goals are? Who do we look at? Who are the players sitting on the team, very much like the family members? And how do I get the best out of those people? And if there are any parents listening, the way you parent your first kid versus your second kid versus your third kid are totally different, right?
Yeah.
And so it's going to shape the compilation of your family. Workplaces are no different.
That's right. And I think, and there's another concept that I always sit down with my CEOs and my executive teams is I love, you know, when I think about IO psychology, you know, bringing in, and just to give more context, you know, like you did to the audience, the viewers, you know, social psychology is very close into IO psychology. Social psychology focuses on the social construct of human beings, just like living and existing. Right?
Yeah.
IO psychology kind of brings on like the social context of people living within the workplace. Like, what does that actually look like? And the first thing that I sit down with my executive team is I say, okay, there are two organizational industrial psychology theories called Theory X and Theory Y. And those two theories, let's look at them, you know? And I always bring them back. I'm like, what is it? I never heard of it. Like, where does it come from? Well, let me talk about it. Theory X is the concept where individuals, where organizations and managers mainly believe that, you know, employees are, you know, extrinsically motivated. They need to be controlled. They're not very smart. And the more money you give them, the better off they are. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Theory Y is the concepts that, you know, employees, and this is what the manager's point of view, are, you know, intrinsically motivated. And, you know, if you give them freedom and some guidance, they will build and they do. I think a lot of organizations operate with a front-facing Theory Y concept and behind closed doors operate on a Theory X mindset. And those things are in conflict with each other. And when you put those into the different categories of going back to work, performance, compensation, you know, job, career development, all those things, they get like, they get conflicted, right? And I think that, you know, you should, one piece of advice I always try to give is like, let's really look at how our operational practices are really focused on. And are they really focused on, you know, moving from X to Y? Do we want to stay there? Like just really understanding where we are to move forward, because we can't do both. Because then organizations feel like they're being fake and phony. Organizations feel very sterile. And if employees feel like not super connected, then it impacts performance. So you really want to understand which concept can really help understand and help support, you know, the right business outcome from a social psychology standpoint and an IO psychology standpoint.
Oh my God. I just love the way you're breaking this down. And it's because I think it's true, right? People want to be like, I care so much about people. People feel like we're good people and they're approaching it the right way. But when you actually look at the systems in place, they're kind of where we lack awareness around it. So the first step is like stepping back to be like, okay, what are we actually doing here? Then also one thing, we work like on the group side a lot with like scaling companies, and a lot of like their mission, vision, values is still like half baked a little bit, but that is not just like a mission, vision, values exercise. That becomes the shared goals and the social contract that permeates everything, right? So we have to have very clear vision around what we're here to accomplish together, so we can figure out the how we're going to do that, how we work together to get this done. And then we have kind of an anchor to come back to, which is like, okay, is work from home feasible or whatever it is based on the vision that we have co-created and set out together? And it takes away, it neutralizes the power a little bit to be like, listen, we co-created this thing. Like, it's not me telling you have to do this. It's like, what do we need to like get this thing done that we both sort of want to do?
Absolutely. And your talent strategy has to support that. And this is where I think some HR professionals feel a little hopeless, not quite clear in the direction, is because, you know, they're trying to, you know, do what's good for the organization. They're also trying to do what's good for the people. And they're not really sure which direction to go. And the best way to do that is to have a fact-based conversation about these theories. Mm-hmm. Then analyze your operational principles, like what is the employee life cycle, the life journey? Like how do they operate, like, you know, throughout the workplace? How do they get information? How do they get rewarded? How do they get recognition? Like all the different things. And does it fit into this theory X, theory Y concept? Which one is more so than other? Then take that information and say, you know what, we did an evaluation. And I think this is the part where, you know, HR executives are in charge of culture.
Are or aren't, you're saying?
Are.
Oh, okay. Go.
In charge of culture, because they're bringing in the concepts of how
you're the mouthpiece, basically, that you're holding up. Yeah.
Right. So you're the person that's like, no, executive team. Let me help you understand how employees are motivated within the organization. Okay. And then you can be able to give to the customer. So it's not about writing the missions and the values. It's really about understanding the actual like science behind it, right? And there's so much information out there in the world about IO psychology. So for anyone who's out there that is, you know, I call them a late stage HR executive, you know, there's so much information for you. There's so many people like myself that can help and be a partner and coach and all that kind of stuff to help you understand these concepts. So you can go into these rooms and say, like, you know, if you do this thing, this is going to be the impact that you're going to make. And it's not the direction that you want to go in. Right. So that's the part where I think that HR executives are responsible for culture, is to make sure that the CEO, the board, whomever you have influence on, to be able to understand the people concept and then make very, you know, clear decisions on how they want to, you know, work out the culture and how the culture plays out within the organization.
I mean, it makes perfect sense, right? If we apply this to different disciplines, you need evidence-based information to even know what the kind of options are to make decisions. But it's like a big lift, right? Not everybody's gone to school for psychology and like, how do you even know where to start? And then that's where sort of a person comes in or a consultant to be like, all right, here are some options. And I think about this, like when I was earlier in my career, I was like a practicing. So I'm a clinical psychologist by training who functions like an organizational psychologist. Within clinical psych, I actually specialized in health psychology. So that is like, and that's actually really how I got into more org psych stuff, because a lot of that is like mindset and lifestyle behaviors and all the things, like how you work with people, social environments, all the things. But like different kind of parts of psychology have sort of like lenses in which they look through, right? So if you're looking from a health, from like, let's say cognitive behavioral therapy, you're going to be looking at thoughts, you're going to be looking at feelings, you're going to look at behaviors and the intersection. Health psychology, which is what I'm like really rooted in, is really we look through a biopsychosocial model. So like what's going on with the body, you know, in terms of like, you know, do you have what you need in terms of sleeping, eating, exercise, healthy lifestyle, like the physical stuff. But the psychological part is like kind of like the mindsets, the support, like all that. And then the social is like community, right? So for in the workspace, that's really teams and organizations. But all those things really shape outcomes in terms of health and functioning. So anyway, that's kind of like my default lens in which I look through. But I'm just wondering, when you're thinking about things from like a theoretical perspective, I know motivation is a big driver for you, it sounds like, really looking at intrinsic versus extrinsic. But what are some of those other frameworks or like lenses that you like tend to, and I'm not trying to have you like quote or put you on the spot to be like, what's your, you know, favorite, but what are those default like lenses or those different hats? They're kind of like, I'm going to explore like this organization through the whatever lens.
You know, I it definitely depends. And, you know, the one thing that comes up for me is when I look at like overall organization performance, you know, usually when you're brought in and, you know, you're getting the most pressure as an HR executive, it's like the company's not performing.
Yeah. Something's wrong. Help.
Something's wrong. Right. And there's so many symptoms across the board.
Yeah.
And I remember going through a process with a company that I was head of HR for called LivePerson. And I feel like that model was probably the best model possible, was really understanding how we were showing up for customers. And the best way to and so how I even start like my theories or my concepts is, you know, I go to the sales organization, I do observations, and that's when I was like a business partner, you know, senior executive there. And I would say, okay, how are you showing up for these, you know, for our customers? And these are big brands. These are like Home Depot, Lowe's. These are like big T-Mobile. These are big companies. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like household names. And, you know, there were a variety of different, you know, ways that, you know, it was really good. And there was a lot of ways that it wasn't. And I think, you know, a couple of things came to mind, or what I learned was, you know, it depended on the executive that they had, or the account executive they had. It depended on where they were with the product. This is a tech company. So it was depending on the product and the technology, you know, the product roadmap was at, and where their product roadmap was at, and all these different things. But the biggest thing that shouted to me was, and this is what I kind of brought to the board and to the CEO, was, you know, we weren't showing up as if we were the experts. And we weren't showing up as we were preeminent. You know, we're charging a premium price for this particular piece of technology that's going to save them so much money, or so much time and ease, whatever it is. And in fact, you know, we're not showing up. And also, we're inconsistent across some of our major, our top 10 accounts, right? And with that being said, you know, I was able to like then work with a consultant to be like, this is how we should show up in front of our customers. And then we're going to build a culture against that model and against that mindset. And that's when all the other theories and everything came through. So, you know, one thing that I do pride myself as an HR executive is that I get involved with the business more than, you know, than is asked. I'm sitting in client meetings and customer meetings. I'm going to customer events. I need to understand that piece and not be behind the scenes, because then I won't be able to impact. And I can see the sense of urgency, you know, with the executive team and the CFO that he's presenting these terrible numbers to the board, and the CEO who's stressed out, and everyone, you know what I mean? And I'm right there with them, being able to give them advice to change things around, because they're all out of ideas. Their expertise is in their area. And my area is to help them build and develop and think differently. So that's kind of how I've been able to kind of step in. And my favorite quote of all time that I always use, right, is actually from Mike Tyson. And the quote is, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
That's a good one. I mean, it's so true. You're like, okay, what am I going to do? Right. And I think the other part of this is like, I think the what of you're going to do is even second. We have these automatic responses that are just going to come flying to the surface based on however life, whatever life we've lived until that point.
Dissonance. Yeah. Trauma. Everything comes up.
Everything comes up, and now you're in reaction mode. And then, so like, I think it's kind of like, okay, how do you raise awareness around that? You know, like, I'm just even thinking about how this comes up in personal life. Like, you know, say you're beefing with your family in some way or something like this, and you're kind of getting back into those old patterns. And you're like, okay, what do I actually want here? How can I have awareness around like, what do I want? What is best for whatever I'm trying to achieve, or like how I want to represent myself in the world, even though I feel that trigger, you know, that like, happens for all of us because we're human.
Yeah. And I think, and listen, you know, let's tie it back to motivation. There's also something that we all need to keep in mind. And I always do that. It's everyone has different levels of motivation, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's accountable to someone, but the degrees of separation kind of shifts the pressure around motivation and why people are doing what they're doing and why they're doing it. Right. And what I find is that when you get below, like, you know, middle management down, you know, their motivations are mainly what's happening outside of their lives, making rent for the month, being able to have enough to take care of their family and take care of themselves, their social life, all of those tend to pull their motivations one way. Then you get to people that are, you know, senior level and up, And their motivation is based on their brand, their impact, their influence. It's kind of like looking at Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
I was like, literally thinking Maslow's, like as they're talking, it's kind of like a mapping how you're relating.
Yeah. It's like you're building, it's like HR executives are trying. This is why you guys need the science so bad, because it really helps you. And this is what it helps me. It makes me like, oh, I'm not crazy.
Yeah. You're like, this person said it and studied it. Therefore, like, believe me.
Like, this is like, why am I feeling, why does everything feel so weird? But like, when you think about it, it's like, if you look at and this for those who don't know Maslow's hierarchy of needs, please Google it. But I'm trying my best to paraphrase. Bobby's helping. That bottom primitive part is like, you're taking care of your basic needs, right?
Yeah.
And a majority of employees are at that phase. And to be honest with you, in this economy, very senior people are at that
phase. Yeah. Right?
You know, they went from self-actualization at the top of the pyramid where they didn't have to worry about it. They knew that their mortgages are going to be paid and everything is going to be done and their kids are going to be off to college, no problem. And their careers are where it's at. So now they're back here. Right.
Yeah.
And then how do you build connectivity to a workforce based on knowing those concepts? Right.
Yeah.
And
that's
what I help, you know, organizations do, is to be like, let's hit people exactly where it counts. We do this for customers. Yeah. Customer profiling, the right, you know, the market research is there. We have to do the same thing internally with employees.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes to everything. So like one, some of our partners we work a lot with scaling companies, but I'm noticing this theme now where we're working with a fair amount of companies that are a little bit like manufacturing, kind of like blue collar-y. So there's a wide range. We have one awesome company, one of my favorite companies there. They have like these senior executives coming from like kind of big tech, but then they have people like on the manufacturing floor, right? And their rapid growth and time of it. So how do you keep all these different kind of like types of people or personas together while you're also pouring more people in and growing and all the things? And it's so fun.
Yeah, a good example of that was when I was at Oscar Health. I was a VP of Talent Strategy there. I had a pretty large team. I helped bring them public during the pandemic remotely.
Yikes.
But it was a wonderful experience. Yeah. And we had a workforce out in Tempe, Arizona, that was pretty much a call center. These are your blue collars, you know, this is like their first like corporate job in a sense. And then you had the tech arm.
The tech arm is
a different beast, right? And working, you know, in tech organizations for most of my career, you know, I actually have to pull from my experience. It's something that people don't know about me is that I have a very extensive career in retail. I used to work at Airwin Imports, Macy's, Bloomingdale's, H&M, you named it, I worked there. And I know what it's like to be on the floor, right? And hearing like the corporates coming or the higher ups are making decisions, right? And, you know, with that being said, you know, what I did at Oscar was laid out like, where are you? And these are people, and this is exempt versus non-exempt employees. And that's also a thing. So it's really like highlighting, you know, here's where you're the same. And here's where you're different, and here's why.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to cater
make it implicit, explicit, and let's just talk about it.
Right. Let's talk about it. And it's not about, well, they get to have this, and you don't get to have that. And it's like they're different. These are all different. It's okay to be different, but we are all serving in one way to support our customers, right?
Yeah.
And that's how we unite. Mm-hmm. That's how we stay united. It's about supporting the customers, because everybody, I mean, you think about like, you know, conveyor belt working, like, you know, on the conveyor belt.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, person A has to put the widget, you know, in. You can then paint it the color it needs to be, but it has to go through that process. And they need different training. They need different support. They need different management. They need different things for them to do their best, so that when it gets to your turn in the conveyor belt, you can perfectly shift your piece in, because you're all serving one mission. And I think that's the concept. I think people kind of dive too much into the like, oh, I know, and like, you know, we should be the same. Like, no, we are the same. But we have very specific purposes in this bigger picture of the organization.
Yeah. Yeah. That alignment. Yeah. It's like, that's really matters, right? Everybody has a different part to play, and they have to see how they fit in the larger system. And so I think there's a part of it, which is like the skills part of it. But the other part of it is like, that's really how you increase motivation too, knowing purpose and seeing your role and how it ties to this larger shared like goal is really important. But yeah. I know we, you know, this is, I can't believe we're already like almost at 30 minutes. So I wasn't even paying attention because it's so fun. But one thing I do want to quickly hit on, because I think you can speak to it really well, is like, how do you use psychology to, in like the data around it, and how do you have people and leaders in general feel empowered to really lean on the science of this and use that language and the data to help people understand like the role of psychology at work? Like, what does that even look like for you? What do you do here?
I think that it is easier than you think, because all of us are all Google doctors. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. Yep.
Dr. Google. Sure. Dr. ChatGPT now. I'm like, oh my God, am I dying? Am I like actually, you know?
You have one cough and you're pulling up the symptoms and you're reading things and you're going through whatever. So we are all capable of doing that, right?
Yeah.
We choose what we see there. You can go on Google search and look up IO psychology in the scholar section of Google search. And, you know, you can just type in like, you know, people are constantly leaving, or, you know, retention. Just like put in words that you commonly use in the organization and stick it into Google Scholar, IO psychology, kind of like tag to it. And then spend your time kind of like going down that rabbit hole as if you would go through a WebMD. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's the same. Totally.
Was our doctors, but we, you know, we can kind of like navigate a bit of the information. Don't be afraid to do that. And also, when it comes back to like bringing that back to the workplace after you've educated yourself, it's also about like taking that information, making it relevant for the problems that you're trying to solve, and then intertwine that in a way where people can understand it, where it's kind of like easy to digest. Mm-hmm. You don't want to bring words that you just, you know, you haven't found. I mean, imagine someone, you know, going to a doctor and they're just speaking just purely as a doctor. Like, you're not going to understand what's happening. So you use some bedside table manners, and just really use the internet. There's so many people, so many things, so many works. I'm actually getting publishing today and tomorrow.
Yeah, so it keeps coming.
It keeps coming. So I advise to do that.
Yeah, I love that. And like ChatGPT is great here. Like this is really, it's like, okay, what's the problem? You ask for reputable sources, make sure you check the source, so it's not like a hallucination or something. And then you read about it. But even then, if you're reading more, like, because there's such a rift between the academic world and then also sort of mainstream kind of publication, but how can you actually just take that? You can like, you know, plug that into ChatGPT and be like, help me understand this. So, you know, it's coming from, you know, a peer-reviewed, reputable resource that's been evidence-based, all the things, and then translate it to your organization and your problem, like using AI. Yeah. That's like a great use case for like how you can actually, and quite honestly, we do this like all the time, just with, as like I'm looking and exploring like different areas within IO Psych, like helping people understand how like we can solve their unique problem that's really not super unique, right? But then having the evidence behind it, we either found this in our research or this is what really like the journals say. And like, this is how this will like impact.
Exactly.
I know. Exactly. So we should get ready to end. You are amazing and your energy is just so like awesome. Wait, and can I just like, what kind of earrings do you have? I'm a big gold hoop. Yeah, wait, are they? So are they like bamboo-y? What is it?
Oh, bamboo earrings. Yeah, that's actually their name, bamboo earrings. Bamboo.
So I need a pair. These are very Boston bamboo. I think it's very New York too. Boston, New York. I wear gold hoops pretty much every day. I don't have bamboo yet, but I think I need to get them.
You need a bamboo.
I think I need them. I need to get them.
I know you're coming to New York at some point, so I'm taking you right to the store.
Oh, good. Do you have like a place?
Oh, I have hundreds of places to go. They're okay.
Yes.
They're actually like $2 or $3 at the beauty supply store.
Amazing. Amazing. Amazing.
If you lose them, you're like, whatever, I have another pair in house.
That's good. Yeah, no, I'm like, I have like an arsenal of gold hoops, but they're, you know, I need to like expand my repertoire because they're getting a little bit boring because I wear them like every day. Anyway, next podcast, gold hoops and psychology. Hoops
Let's
and,
do it.
You know.
Psychology. I would listen.
Yeah, me too, actually. Those are like the two main things in my life. Throw food in there and we're all set. Okay, well, you're the best, LaToya. So if people want to find you, like, where do they find you? And
yeah, so LinkedIn is the best way to find me, LaToya Lynn on LinkedIn. And, you know, if people are, you know, open to wanting to throw me an email, they can send me an email at LaToya@LaToyaLynn.com. I made it easy for everybody. And that's probably where you find me mostly, most of my content. You can also find me at your local coffee shop somewhere in Brooklyn. I like to explore different coffee shops around the borough. So if anybody wants to come talk to me, let me know.
Awesome. Well, I will totally do that once I get to New York. As you know, I'm like sitting in LA right now, not quite sure what time it is, but I'll be coming to New York this summer at some point. So we'll hang. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us, LaToya. I just really, really appreciate it. And you're so smart and awesome, and you know, keep on doing your thing.
Yes.